Yeah, if you can hear my voice, you can wander back to your computer and we'll get going. Have a few comments and I changed them a bit today. So I don't know if any of you watched the Super Bowl yesterday. I'll tell you how bad of a football fan I am. That's the only game I watched this entire year. First, last, and only. And the only reason I watched it is I had some good friends that were having a party and they said, oh, let's go. I mean, I used to be more of a fan. But so one of the things I was thinking about, I was watching the coaches, and sometimes from time to time, as teachers, they recommend that you be your own coach when it comes to your meditation practice. And I think that's a really good thing. I was thinking of talking about something like this anyway, and then I seemed like a good time to do it. If you think about a coach, what kind of things do they help you with? They help you with the little things, like if you've ever played a sport. I mean, if you're a golfer, that you practice putting a lot. If you're a basketball player, you practice shooting. You practice little things that make you good at what you do, and you practice those over and over. And even if you're a professional and you've been doing it for, 10 years, you still practice those little things. And so as meditators, we can do that too, but we don't necessarily have a coach, so you can be your own coach. And I think in some ways, especially with something like meditation, you're almost better to be your own coach because you know what's going on inside and other people don't. Of course, you can always, ask questions from teachers if you want to. So I encourage you tonight, I'm going to talk a little bit about the small things and a little bit about the big things that you might want to coach yourself in. And I'm quite convinced that you're as good a coach for yourself as anybody. One thing, so if you think, what are you trying to accomplish? What's your big picture? Why are you here? What are you doing? Why are you meditating? Why did you come here on Monday night instead of a lot of other things you could do? And so when you think of those and keep those foremost in your mind, that can help direct how you coach yourself because you have a sense of what you're trying to do. One thing I just read this morning, and it kind of fits in. There's a quote from George Harrison. George Harrison, in my opinion, was the most spiritually minded of the Beatles, and I was a big Beatles fan. And he used to say this a lot, and he said it, according to the people that were around him, he said this very close to the end when he was dying. He said, "Everything else can wait, but the search for God cannot wait." And love one another. I thought that kind of, puts everything into perspective. So I'm suggesting that you take the reins of your own spiritual practice, learn to be your own coach. So let's revisit some of the smaller things. So, and these are things that, you figured out maybe a long time ago, and maybe they work really well. And if they don't, maybe it's time to change them. From time to time, it's good to think about this stuff. I know I do, and so I'm just encouraging that. So, for instance, some of the simple things, like when do you practice? Morning, evening, middle of the day, twice a day? Is that working for you? Or is it, you picked a time and now you can never do it because it doesn't work for your life anymore? Think about that. Coaches have people change little things if something else caused them to go, off track. Another thing is, where do you sit? What room? In your office? Do you sit at lunch? Do you sit in your car? I had a student once who said as soon as she got home, there were like a dog and two cats and kids and a partner, and she wasn't going to have a minute to herself. So she actually drove by Buffalo Park and sat in her car for 20 minutes, then went home. That was a pretty creative way to coach yourself to being more effective. How long? An hour, half hour, 20 minutes, 5 minutes? Joseph Goldstein talked about somebody was having trouble with this, and he said, just put yourself in the sitting position every day. Just, wherever you sit, just go there and sit. And if you get up 5 seconds later, fine. And what do you think will happen if you just get to that place and sit there? More times than not, you're going to stay a while. Maybe even a long while. But so making a commitment to just sit, even for a very short time, has been useful for some people. What about the techniques? So I'm switching to techniques. Where do you notice your breathing? At your abdomen or the nostrils? If you do one, have you ever tried the other? Just to see what that's like. You know, when I first learned, there was nobody taught paying attention to the air at the nostrils. It was all breathing, you know, all the abdomen. So that was all I'd heard for years. And so I sort of got comfortable with that. But every once in a while, I try the other, and I think it works well. I know in the class I teach with Kathy, it's usually about half the people like the abdomen, half the people like the nostrils. So think about that. Noting. Do you like noting or do you not like noting? Now, I like noting a lot. So like a note rising, note falling, and note heat, note cold, note planning, note remembering. So Joseph Goldstein, who was really my first main teacher, he had this thing. He doesn't talk about it much anymore, but he called it count your NPMs. NPMs were notings per minute. And he said, try to get your notings per minute as high as possible. If you're doing one noting per minute, that means you're probably gone a lot. If you're doing like 30 or 40 notings per minute, you're just, you know, you're getting lost, but you're coming back, you're noting things, you're kind of just noting all the little things that are going on. And I've found that useful at some time. You know, and for yourself, you have to say, am I lost today or am I right there? And if you're right there, you might not need any technique. And if you're lost, you might try notings per minute. So just have a good tool bag of things. Thinking. Can you note thinking? Can you note the types of thinking? I brought it up a little bit in the meditation, planning, remembering, judging, rehearsing. So those are things to pay attention to. And then, so those are things to pay attention to when you're sitting. What about when you're up and about? Are you trying to be mindful when you're not just sitting? As I have practiced over the years, I find myself being mindful or trying to be mindful more when I'm up and about than when I'm sitting. Because, you know, if you sit, even if you sit 30 minutes, half a full hour a day, you're still up more. So learning to pay attention then is really interesting. Some people just pay attention to the breath. Some people have various techniques and things they like to pay attention to. A teacher that I had once, some of you may have heard this, there's a technique seeing, hearing, posture, touching. I've talked about it before, where you just rotate between those four. And so you, if you have questions about that, I'm happy to talk about it. Paying attention to specific things, like brushing your teeth every day. Say, okay, I'm going to pay attention. I'm not going to think while I'm brushing my teeth. I'm going to notice what's happening. Or when you shower or dress, wash dishes. I actually pay attention. I try to be mindful every time I drive. Now, I'm not in some zoned out state. I'm very much right there. And, if, you know, you have to check yourself. But I instead of turning on the radio or talking to people, I just am paying attention when I'm driving. Another thing is choiceless awareness. Have you ever tried that? Instead of being aware of just anything, you just let yourself be aware of whatever. You know, I mean, if you see something, you note seeing. If you hear something, note hearing. So music's been a big part of my life. I was a musician for a while, and some of you may have heard me tell the story before, but when I was about 10 or 12, my parents had tickets to the symphony. I grew up in a medium-sized town, Toledo, Ohio, and they had a pretty good symphony. So that my parents had tickets, they would go, and my father would always fall asleep, and my mother would always be elbowing him because he'd start snoring and disrupt the show. So she didn't really like going with him, and he didn't really want to go either because he was tired and he was working. So, but they had these tickets. So she said, well, Alan, you want to go? And I said, yeah, I'd love to go. And so this was before I was much interested. So I went and I thought it was incredible. You know, they had good seats. They were sort of like four rows up right in the middle. And you could hear one thing was on this side and one thing was on the other side. It was like stereo. And I just thought it was incredible. So one of the things I do a lot is I try to think of the world as like a symphony. You know, with a symphony, you don't care what the next note is. You're not trying to make the bass player do something different or the horn do something different. whatever comes up, you notice it. And so what are, and when I played in the band, there were like five people in the band. And so this works pretty well. What are the main instruments in your life? Well, seeing, hearing, tasting, touching, smelling, and thinking. I consider thinking as like the lead vocalist. That's where a lot of the effort goes. So through, as you go through your day, you could just say, okay, this is a symphony. I'm just going to pay attention to whatever's there and just think of it that way. And for me, and if any of you are sort of musically inclined, it might resonate. And so as a coach, you need to decide among all these possible things you can do, which one works for me and which one works for me now, because what works for you today might not tomorrow. And it's good to sort of shake things up. So I'm encouraging you to shake things up. So that's all I wanted to say about the small stuff. What about the big picture things? You know, why are you doing this practice? You know, my experience is that people come to meditation for a variety of things, but sometimes it can be broken down into two categories. I'm sure it's more than that, but one is suffering. There's something going on wrong, and they want help with that. So it could be anxiety, fear, distraction, pain, confusion, loss. There's a lot of things that can bother us, and it's hard to deal with. So this practice is really good for that. So that might be one reason you're here, one of those. And the other thing is just understanding, wanting to understand what the heck's going on. Curiosity. What a bizarre thing. You know, at some age, and it's probably different for everybody, maybe 8 or 10 or something, you look around and say, wow, you know, I can make these hands move. What the heck am I doing here? And then you start noticing the things that Buddha noticed. You know, he was protected when he was young, but then when he went out, you know, old age, you see that. You see that in people that you love as they get old. Sickness, you see people getting sick. You get sick yourself. And death, old age, sickness, and death. Curiosity, what the heck's going on? That's another thing that really drives me. I'm curious about the world a lot. I'm sure most of you are too. So where do you learn? I mean, you know, I've been doing Vipassana for a long time and it's my main practice, but along the way, I have done other types of practice. You know, I hope this is okay to say, but I don't think Buddhism has an exclusive thing on truth. You know, I think there have been people who have become what we would call enlightened in every practice. And I know a number of teachers, you know, Vipassana teachers who have been doing this for a long time. And most of them, when I talk to them, you know, one-on-one, they say that they have had other practices, but they still keep this as their main one because that suits them. And I think I'm in the category of saying that Vipassana suits me, but I've learned other things from other people along the way. And I think that that's an interesting thing. Be aware of synchronicity. Sometimes something just comes up and is presented to you. So give it a try. If you end up not liking it, don't. If it ends up fitting in, then that's fine. So how do you know that if something comes your way, that it's something you should do? Well, last week, Brian had an interesting, you know, talk. He was talking about this village, the Kalama. I'm trying to remember how to pronounce it right. And so they were at the edge of a forest and they had a lot of teachers come during Buddha's time. And they said, well, how do we know which teacher is right? You know, and he said, well, look at these qualities. Let me find where this was. He said, he says, when you know for yourself that the qualities of a potential path are skillful, blameless, praised by the wise, and lead to well-being and happiness, then these practices can be seen as good. And, you know, you can do that. So when you're a coach and if somebody presents something and you check it out according to the qualities, you know, you can do that. Okay, so my advice is to go wherever the path leads you, use the things I just talked about that Brian mentioned last week to decide whether, you know, they're right for you. And reject anything that seems mean, or exclusivity is one that I think is, you know, if it's the only way, that always bothers me, that because I think there's more than a way. If there's selfishness involved, then leave that aside. You know, when we teach these classes, Kathy and I teach classes at Employee Assistance and Wellness at NAU, and now we're doing it in conjunction with Flagstaff Insight Meditation. Actually, tomorrow is the third class of our current, the third night of the 6-week class. You know, it's interesting. There are some people who really like it. You can tell right away they like it, they do it, they come back, they practice, they have good questions. There are some people who like it okay. You know, they do it and they think maybe it'll catch on, and sometimes it does. And there are some people who don't like it all, and after a week or two, they're gone. And so they're sort of being their own coach. Some people like it, some people don't. And as far as I'm concerned, that's fine. You know, they have to find what their path is. But I know some people have been helped a lot, and you know, run into people from time to time in town. In fact, I'll bring this thing up. Just a few days ago, I was having a blood test. And I was having a blood test because I have my annual physical in a few days. And so I went into the Sonora Quest, and I was sitting there, and there was myself and one other person. And I sort of had my head down. And she came up and said, "Oh, hey, are you Alan? Did you teach that class?" And I said, "Yeah." So 5 years ago, she'd been in the class at NAU. And she said, "You know, this particular aspect of that class really helped me." And so, you know, it's heartwarming to see that people, some people like it and get it and they get helped by it. Other people say, "Nah, no, thank you." And they go do something else. And that's fine. They're being their own coach. So recently, when I was meditating, I was trying to remind myself of why I'm meditating. I mean, I know why I'm meditating because I've been doing it for a while, but it doesn't matter. You still need to remind yourself. Is it for the body and the mind? For me, that's not it, because the body and the mind seem sort of temporary. No, it's for the life force or the spirit or whatever word you want to call it. That's why I practice, and I think it's been helpful. And so I think some of you might too. I mean, this journey we're on is very weird. Sometimes I think of it, it's like a 3 or 4 dimensional jigsaw puzzle that we're trying to figure out. You know, we don't know where most of the pieces fit yet. You know, even my wife loves jigsaw puzzles, so she always has one out and she's trying to find pieces. Well, imagine one that's not 2-dimensional, but it's 3-dimensional, or even through time, which would add the 4th dimension. Is there a way to figure out how all this works? Do you have to even know? You know, part of the fun of doing a jigsaw puzzle is you don't know. You got all these pieces and you put them together. And I kind of think of, sometimes I think of life as a journey trying to fit these pieces together. I mean, think about a 5-year-old kid. You know, think back when you were 5. What did you know about this world? Well, you knew a little bit. You know, your parents told you some things, but you didn't know very much. Did that mean you couldn't progress? No. A 5-year-old progresses really well. You know, they go to the next step. They know what, they learn what 5-year-olds are supposed to know. And then they move to be 7-year-olds, and they learn what 7-year-olds are supposed to know. And their parents, other people in their family, teachers help them along the way. And some of the pieces start to fit together. And, you know, eventually you become adult and you have some of the pieces of this life. Do you have the pieces of the spiritual life figured out? Well, I don't. I mean, I'm still trying to figure things out. So I think of myself as like a, you know, a 5-year-old with this 4-dimensional puzzle. But maybe I know enough to keep progressing. Maybe I know what I'm supposed to know at this age, but you just keep trying. And so I try to be my own coach to move forward. And that's what I'm suggesting that we all do. So I was reading something just yesterday, and there's a teacher I really like. I mean, he's no longer alive, and some of you have heard me talk about him, Nisargadatta Maharaj. And I didn't even I got this from somebody else who put this quote up, and it has a lot to do with what we're talking about here. So if you substitute the word guru for coach, or substitute coach for guru, this came from him. And he's the guy that wrote the book, I Am That, and some other things. So he said, the greatest guru, and these are his words translated, the greatest guru, the greatest coach is your inner self. That's what he thought. Truly, he is the supreme teacher. He alone can take you to your goal. And this was a man asking the question. That's why he's saying he. And he alone meets you at the end of the road. Confide in him, and you need no outer guru. Now, a lot of people have questions about, you know, do they need gurus or not? According to him, no. Have you ever just listened inside and you kind of know, okay, this is good, or you know, okay, this is not good? You know, listen deeply and you can tell. So we're close to the end of what I'm going to talk about. And I want you to do an exercise. Some of you know, do you remember Eric Kolvik? You know, he moved. He's now in New Hampshire. So he lived here for a long time and he was a teacher. And he did something that affected my life quite a bit. You know, I took a number of retreats from him. There was a, when I moved here, and I moved to Flagstaff in 98 from Tucson, but he was giving a retreat in 1999, I think, in Tucson. So I drove down and did a weekend retreat. And it was a Catholic facility that had been used to train nuns. And there was quite a few people there. And it was only a 2.5 day retreat. And so Saturday night, which was the last night, he had people lay on the floor. I don't want you to lay on the floor. Just stay where you are. But I'm going to give you the idea of what he said. And it has this, it's along this idea of being your own coach. He said, think deeply right now for a few moments. And I'm gonna have you do this for the last couple of minutes. Think deeply about what you could do now, today or this week or this month, to increase your spiritual development. Are there steps you could take? Are there things you could do? Are there resources you could bring in that would help you on your spiritual path right now? So let's take a moment and just kind of look deep inside and see if there's anything you could do, anything that occurs to you. Some resource or teaching or time, or something you could do. It feels right to you to help you coach yourself on your path. Okay, so I encourage you to spend more time. So to close out, I want to tell you what happened to me after doing this exercise that Eric recommended. So I was laying on the ground. I was thinking, he had us do this for 5 or 10 minutes. And then he said, keep these thoughts with you for the next day. So that night, you know, I was sleeping there at the retreat center. For some reason, I got up like at 3:30 in the morning. I went outside. Nobody was there, and just paced. That's sort of a common thing I do. I just pace when I'm trying to think. And there was a parking lot, and I went around and around. And by the end, I was out there for maybe 30 to 45 minutes. And by the end of it, I had a whole plan to take a leave without pay from NAU because I was a professor here. And I knew that I knew they weren't going to pay me, so I knew it had to be a leave without pay. I spent 6 months at Insight Meditation in Massachusetts, where Joseph Goldstein was still teaching. He's still teaching there, but he taught the 3-month retreat. Then I went to Burma and Thailand and India for the next 6 months. I spent a whole year, And I had never even thought really deeply about doing that until Eric asked me to do this exercise I just brought up. And so, and all the pieces fit into place. You know, I was thinking, you know, what are the odds I can really pull this off without getting fired? You know, I mean, because I really would wanted to come back to the job because that was 20 years ago and I was much younger. So I said, well, I'll just take one step and then another step and another step. And if I can't do it, I can't do it. But we'll see what happens. So I kept doing that and it worked. And it was a profound year of just meditating and learning and traveling. And you know, I went to a lot of the sites in India and Bodh Gaya and Varanasi and mostly just meditated in Burma and made some great friends who I'm still friends with that I traveled with. So, you know, I'm not saying that that's going to happen for every person, but just keep in mind that whatever it seems right for you, if you give this a shot, maybe try it tonight or sometime this week and see what can you do to increase your spiritual growth. Because as George Harrison said, everything else can wait, but the search for God cannot wait. And love one another. So that's all I had to say for tonight. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.